Hey, welcome to the show. On today's episode, we have Tim Bolo. Timbo is a songwriter, guitar player, overall just badass musician. He's kind of a Nashville legend.
Timbo did multiple live performances here on the Rusick Podcast. If you want to see those, head over to our YouTube channel at Rusick Podcast. There you can see his live performances as well as every other guest we have on here. So go over there and check it out.
That's what I think is fucking great about it. Is like to me, it's just a completely selfish endeavor of like giving like people I think that are awesome out here a platform to just make cool shit. You know what I mean? Like, I love that.
I think it's great. And also talking to the people, you know, that are making the music, you know, I think is also helpful.
Yeah.
And there are things like this, I'm sure going on somewhere, but you don't hear about it. And what you guys are doing is real hands-on for this community.
Yeah.
And this is Music City USA, and you guys are tied in with a lot of the
That's what we're trying to do. Like we've got we've got Mark Thornton coming on in a couple of weeks. I'm really excited to talk to
you. Yeah, my favorite guitar player.
I'm super excited for that one.
Big inspiration.
But again, it's like what excuse do you have in life, save something like this, to just sit down for a couple hours and like pick someone's brain like that? You know what I mean? Like,
absolutely.
I think the more stuff like that you have in life, the better. So, and for me also, it's just a nice excuse because everyone gets busy and their lives get crazy. It's just a nice excuse to say, okay, one day a week I get to hang out with my best friends and just do something, you know? Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
not a bad way to do it.
It's been a good time.
Yeah.
Well, I had an idea float to me. Well, I guess I could tell you right now, but
yeah.
I had an idea float to me by way of a friend of mine named Robbie, and she runs that store over there called Wicked Ollie's next to the Troubadour Theater.
Okay,
store. Well, as you guys know, the Ernest Tubb bus, the Green Hornet, is in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, it's always open for to walk in and go check it out.
Mm-hmm.
It was me or was it her? I can't remember. We had been over there bullshitting one night, and we had came up with the idea. We wanted to make a podcast and do the podcast in the bus.
That would be awesome.
That's a great idea.
After the show at the Troubadour.
Yeah.
And you could even interview that night's guest.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
That night's show.
Yeah, whomever played.
But you hosted in the Green Hornet.
Yeah,
you know,
that's really beautiful. I like that idea a lot.
And the camera, you know.
Just adjust you. Really.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
And then have the
better
camera.
Is
that cool?
Messing this up.
Is that good?
That good?
Better? Okay, there we go.
Yeah, I get what you're doing. So you can see my face.
There we go. Don't want to hide that beautiful face. Come on. That's a really good idea, though. That's really fun.
You know, I don't think it's came into fruition because I bet Robbie, you know, probably doesn't have the equipment and doesn't have the wherewithal to do it, but it was an idea. And I hinted to her about having somebody being involved to do it. Jesse Whedon came to mind.
Oh, nice.
But Jesse has so much on his plate and he's doing so many things around town.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas you guys are doing this right here, this is what your goal is, to get to use the podcast to share, you know, to communicate with the artist and to hear the music of the artist. Jesse's got a million things going on, but of course, at the time when we thought about this, you know, I didn't know you guys was doing this either. So, but yeah, man, I just always thought that would be a. I mean, how cool would it be to do this there?
That would be amazing. Well, yeah.
Also, you could get shots with the camera of whatever was going on that night.
Yeah, exactly. Totally, yeah. Exactly.
Over there at the Troubadour, and then later on at night in the Green Hornet.
Hey,
and
here's the podcast.
And we do have some ideas of stuff similar.
Yeah, we've got
on the horizon some more involved stuff, live things.
Yeah, so we're actually starting next month. We're starting, this might be a little inside baseball, but we're starting, we're going to do once a month over at D's. We're going to essentially put on like, because they were talking to us about it and they kind of wanted to do like a live podcast there.
Mm-hmm.
And Brian and I were both like, that sounds like a horrible idea. No one wants to sit down and listen to people talk. So what we thought would be even better is like, what, you know, what would be great would be we like MC the night essentially.
Yeah.
And we'll put people who were on the podcast this month or whomever, it could be just friends who we want to see. We'll have them play a bill together, and then we can do like a little, maybe interview. A little bit of talking in between, yeah, that kind of thing.
Great,
like,
yeah, idea, same thing.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
And then figure out some way to, like, you know, up the production value, have like multiple camera angles around the place. Heck, like,
yeah, that needs to be, you know, that needs to be a thing.
Live stream it on the internet and make it a whole like live show.
Exactly.
That'd be badass, man. It's a great idea.
I think, yeah.
Well, I'm all for it. If you guys need anything from me, let me know. But that was just
absolutely
an idea, and I think Robbie would be down for that.
Nice.
In the future.
That'd be amazing. Yeah, the more Timbo playing around town, the better.
Oh, man, I appreciate it. Well, the more I get to hang out in Ernest Stubbs' bus.
There you go, exactly. See, it's a win-win for everyone. But
heck yeah.
Because, okay, so you were born in Nashville, right? Or you're from around here, at least. We've known each other for years, I guess, at this point. But
I heard you say earlier about 6 years, you said you've been here.
Yeah.
Down.
And we met you just like right around the time that we got here, which is kind of crazy. Mm-hmm. But so I remember that you've kind of lived a little bit over around here, right? You haven't been in Nashville a whole life, but you're from here initially. Is that fair? Kind of fair to say?
Well, I'd say so. Yeah. Yeah. I was born and raised here and lived here, you know, most of my life, in and out mm-hmm. of the metro area, just about everywhere around here, except for Brentwood and Franklin. Mm-hmm. I lived in Arkansas. My daddy's hometown, Pocahontas, in the sixth grade, and I think we lived in Branson when I was about 2 years old or something, when daddy was working over there in Branson, doing the thing up there. But other than that, I think I've been here most of my life. When I think
in my head, that's wild, because I'm the oldest of four, and we lived all over as kids. Like, I remember we got out to California when I was 12, and that was, I think, the 11th house I'd lived in. So to me, it's like my life is the complete opposite of that, which I'm always fascinated by people who, and this seems like just a minor thing, but I'm always fascinated by people who have lived in the same place their whole life or near the same place their whole life.
You must have seen like a crazy amount of change, because I've been here, how long?
Yeah, six years.
6 years. And just in that amount of time, I feel like the amount that Nashville's changed is crazy. I'm sure.
Definitely.
It's unrecognizable from how long you've been here.
It's pretty nuts. And again, I you know, being born and raised here, but don't mean in the same house. You know, I went to very many different schools
but even just that same part of the country counties.
And to see the way that it's all changed, blown up the real estate, you know. I just heard or read somewhere that we just dropped out of being the it city now
thank God.
Somebody else, who is it? I think it's in Austin.
Austin, that makes sense.
Maybe I'm wrong.
I think, Austin's definitely seen the same kind of thing Nashville is, where it's just exploding.
I've got some dates down in Austin. It's at an incredible place called the White Horse.
I've been there. That's a great spot.
I love that place. Another great place called the Sagebrush down there. And we come down there and play. And it does remind me a lot of East Nashville in the way that the development has been. But anyway.
Yeah, anytime I've been out there to play a few times in the last handful of years, and anytime I do, I get the same kind of feeling. I think, mm-hmm. this is very East Nashville-esque. Mm-hmm. But it's a fun city.
Last time we were there, that was when we did the South by Southwest thing. That was
5 years ago,
and,
probably,
and
that we did that.
What's that one street where it's like all the houses turned into bars and music venues? And
oh, yeah, it's almost like their Broadway kind of thing.
I've heard that someone told me that's like not even there anymore, and it's all just high-rise apartments and...
Really?
Yeah, like it's gone.
Well, now we're just spreading Nashville rumors or Austin rumors.
I don't know. I haven't been there since whenever that was. But
one thing I'm really fascinated about too is me and all my siblings all play music. I'm the only one dumb enough to actually like do this seriously in life. But all of us play music and love music.
Sure.
But neither of my parents had a musical bone in their body.
Oh, wow.
And I'm really always interested about this with you. You had, again, the opposite experience. Like, both of your parents are musicians, from what I understand. And how was that for you growing up? Just having that so immediate in your life?
Well, first thing I want to say is that I think I have a lot of admiration for somebody who didn't come from a musical background. because there was something in their life, you know, evidently that touched them to make them pursue that. And sometimes that can make somebody grip on even harder to a dream when there was nothing like that around them. As a kid, I took a lot of that for granted because I didn't think what my parents come from. I didn't think any of that I come from was cool or any of that kind of stuff. Until I got older and I realized, because, you know, we're all fucking dumb shits when we're young kids, you know. But nonetheless, I guess that'd be the best answer I can give you on that. Yeah. I'm blessed the way that I come up. They're two. My mama's side of the family was farmers and is a family band, a bluegrass gospel band, and dad come from a very small town in Arkansas, and he had his parents, they liked the music. His mama played the auto harp a little bit, and his dad loved the piano, loved Marty Robbins, and but he grew up, but he was kind of like as I see and hear it growing up, as he was kind of a child prodigy in that town, in that itty bitty town of Pocahontas.
Because your dad's a fiddle player, right?
He's a
he plays quite a few things.
That's
but,
right.
Yeah.
I would always, growing up, I'd always classify him as a guitar player first, and then a fiddle player second.
Okay.
And then a piano player, because he's a hell of a piano player.
Really?
And everybody brags about their dad, but I don't get to see my dad that much. He's kind of a rolling stone. He really is, and he's always been that way. And, you know, it's funny, even when you don't spend big parts of your life with somebody, you end up being just like them if you're related to them, you know.
Yeah.
But it's a blessing. And I always tell everybody, I'm just an itty little bit of what my dad is, really and truly. He's my favorite musician ever.
What was the first music as a young person that grabbed you? Because I have a feeling most of the people that I know, myself included, who love this style of music or similar styles of music, they don't come here from nowhere. They usually have to find a way in from something else. Like for me as a kid, and I've talked about this, I loved punk music as a kid. Like that was the first thing that I fell in love with. For you, what was the first music that you felt like was yours? And then how did you get from that back to this kind of music?
Well, I guess the first music I think I could feel was mine, even though I thought it was goofy because all the other kids at school, you know, didn't have nothing to do with it. Mm-hmm. The first kind of music I felt was mine was the music that we grew up on, which was mm-hmm. bluegrass and country and things of that nature. But I rebelled, you know, growing up, I rebelled. And I loved playing basketball and didn't spend very much time mm-hmm. on any kind of musical ventures, you know, growing up. That's why when somebody says, when you start playing a guitar, I say on and off, you know, through the years, because it was, the instruments was always around the house, but I never, I didn't pick them up very much and spend very much time with them here and there. Only when I got a spurt of mm-hmm. inspiration or something, you know.
But was the guitar the first instrument you picked up, or did you pick up other things before that?
Guitar was the first. Dad, again, you know, Mama would drag us up and make us sing three-part harmony on stage. Where it's places where we little kids, you know, almost just a joke and say we was traumatized, but boy, we didn't think that was cool at all, you know. Oh, Mom, you know. And but the instruments was always around the house, and the guitar was the first thing I picked up. I think I probably was about 8. And I always tell everybody when they ask about you know, like I said, I didn't think any of that stuff was cool that they was playing, Bill Monroe or any of that stuff.
Yeah.
At the time, I wanted to know what they had been listening to, so Dad turned me on to the Beatles. And the first song I ever learned how to play was I Want to Hold Your Hand.
That's good.
I Want to Hold Your Hand. Yeah.
I'm always fascinated by this. There are certain people in my life that I can't imagine them doing anything other than music. And you, Timbo, are one of those people. Like to me, the thought of you going through your day doing anything other than music is like alien to me, you know?
Well, like, I appreciate that. That's a great compliment, I think.
And I truly mean it as a compliment.
Is there anything else you've thought of doing?
First of all, is there anything else you've thought of
doing? Have you ever had a plan B or no?
Well, I'll tell you what. I guess when you say it like that, I I think my whole life, you know, how we got many chapters in our lives, at least that's the way it feels like for me. I think the majority of my life was a plan B. Mm-hmm. Growing up, I seen how hard it was in periods of our life. And Dad made a living off music, but he, you know, we, you know, I don't speak ill of my parents at all, but we you know, we struggled in a lot of ways. And so he hammered it into us too. You always got to have something to fall back on. And, you know, I was born in 89, and the wish for parents for their kids is still strong, but was very strong back then to make sure you go to college, hammer it in,
yeah.
You know, go get a trade, get a, you know what I'm saying? Be a welder, be a doctor, you know, whatever, you know? And so that was very, that was a kind of a thing that was hammered into us at an early age. And so we didn't take the music as serious maybe as we should have if they had been whipping us and telling us to play all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Although they did tell us, if you don't pick up these instruments, you're going to be sorry later. They did say that. And I'm still sorry.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. Yeah, I'm always curious about that, because, again, I had the exact opposite experience in life, where I found music and it just wasn't a part. You know, my parents were very... they loved music. There was always music around the house, but in terms of instruments laying around, that kind of thing, it wasn't part of the everyday furniture, you know? So, you know, I listened to a lot of Sam Cooke and John Denver and Ray Charles and that kind of thing as a kid, like, 'cause that's what my parents loved listening to.
It's
the best stuff. The best stuff. Yeah. But I'm just always fascinated by how other people come into that kind of thing. 'Cause it's so different for everyone. And what, for you, what was, once you started to get a little bit older and you did find your way into it, was there a particular artist or a particular song that you felt like kind of knocked open that door for you? Or was it a very gradual thing?
Knocked open the door for me to start playing live. Open the door for me to start taking music seriously.
Yeah, to start taking it seriously and realize that there's something here that moves me, that I am interested in, and not just something that I'm sort of, that's forced upon me because it's just circumstance.
And what artist? Well, shoot, man, it's hard to say, man. It really is. I'll tell you this first. I'll say the time in my life when I realized that I was meant for something more, which really and truly is what I mean to say, is I was meant to do what my folks, I was meant to have the family trade that my father set out before me. And, was when I was going through a tough time in my life, and about 7 years ago now, I think, if I'm not mistaken. And I was losing friends, they were dying, and just doing things I ought not to do, and ended up going through a divorce, and ended up having a lot of things happen at the same time. And that, getting out of everything there and starting a fresh life, and that made me realize I was supposed to be doing something else. It was like a slap in the face from God that kind of changed the trajectory of my life, so to speak. Artists, man, it's hard. It's hard to say, because I grew up around so many, and looking back on it now, in retrospect, I grew up around so many incredible musicians and special moments that at the time, whether I knew it or not, you know, and was I paying attention or not, but I soaked in. It all got soaked in somehow, and I'm blessed for that now. But I seen a lot of live music. I seen a lot of people on stage, a lot of people talking to the crowd. A lot of showmanship, a lot of entertainment.
Yeah, that's one thing that we talk about a lot on here, and just in general, because it's something I'm fascinated by, but the skill of performing is a skill of itself.
You are so right.
And people often overlook that. There are incredible technical players out here, phenomenal players. It's another thing to see that paired with an ability to capture an audience. And again, not to just sound like I'm going to keep blowing smoke up your ass, but you're so good at that. And, that to me is that's a skill that I really admire, because it takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of hours clocked in on a stage to do that. And it's very difficult to I find it's very difficult to do that in a way that's genuine to yourself. And whenever I watch you perform, and other great performers that I love, that's the skill set that I think those people are shooting for, is the ability to not just be competent at doing that on stage, but to do that in a genuine way where you're being yourself up there. How long did it take you once you kind of started to steer in the direction of music for your life? How long did it take you to feel like, to not only feel comfortable on stage, but to feel as though you could be yourself on stage?
Man, well, I guess, because when I was young, I was shy about it, and Dad and them had to try to get me up. But I just, as I got older, I realized, man, what am I doing? Why am I still bartending or laying hardwood floor doing yada, yada, yada? I was terrible at all that shit anyway. And, man, that's a tough question. Ask the question again. Rephrase the question again.
Yeah, like, when did you start to feel like you could be yourself on stage?
Man, I think that seeing my peers, I think it had something to do with that. I think that seeing so many people through the years and growing up, and my mama is very outgoing. My daddy is kind of a little bit more withdrawn, but he's an incredible musician. And just to tell you, by the way, just to touch base, what I meant to say first off is that's very kind of you to say that. That's what I meant to say. It's the very first thing I wanted to say is it's kind of you to say that. But I think that in all walks of life you do, you have to keep it real, so to speak. You have to, you also have to know that these people are in front of you. You are putting on a show. Whatever you're fucking doing on stage is in front of all of these people. So why would you not engage with them?
Yeah.
Why would you not look at them as you're telling this story that, you know, you grew up on or that you wrote or whatever, so have you, whatever song it is, poem, whatever the hell you're doing up on stage. Why would you not be engaged with these people that are here with you out in the crowd, listening to you? And I think maybe just seeing, you know, being a people person, I feel like I am a people person in a lot of ways. Of course, I can be withdrawn in a lot of ways too, but you want to communicate with people in this world. You know, we only got one life, and communicating on stage is all about sharing the story with the person in my eyes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Whatever's going on, which is, you know, I think that's the most important thing.
Yeah, like I remember very clearly years ago, so seeing you perform, God knows where it was for the first time, but I remember thinking, watching you perform the first few times I saw you, God, he's really great at performing. And then, no, but then what happened was I was sure, okay, this is there's a bit of an act going here. You know what I mean? Because people, oftentimes when you're in that environment, you can be very competent at being a performer, but you are, there's a sense of putting on a show. And then the more that I got to know you, I realized, no, that's just who Timbo is. that's the bar to shoot for. It's to not only be incredibly engaging and have that ability to grab an audience, but to do that while being yourself. And that's a really hard skill to acquire. And for me, that's the thing that I'm always shooting for. And I feel like at this point in my life, I think half the battle of that is just recognizing that. Sure. But recognizing that, one, I'm putting on a show.
Sure.
And two, I want to put on a show while being myself.
Absolutely. And I get what you're saying. I know what you mean by saying being yourself, because you and me have seen enough shows and seen enough folks to know that there's a lot of people that move here or wherever music, you know, the music business can be found. And adopt some sort of image.
It's like
or
a persona
sort of,
or like an act in some way. Yeah.
And you know, I grew up listening to all kind of music and I love all kind of music, but it took me a long time to realize that my heritage and my culture, there's no escaping it. There's no escaping who you are and what you come from.
You can't outrun it.
You can be, you know, the saying is it ain't where you're from, it's it's where you're at. That's true, but you're taking where you're from with you, yeah. no matter what you do. And so I'm blessed. I'm blessed. People, I say that all the time. I had somebody tell me they was going to make a T-shirt about me. It said I'm hashtag blessed. A buddy named Pickle. I think you know Pickle.
Oh, yeah.
But I might use that word generously.
Good, but it's a good word to a good word to go back to in life, because I feel very much the same way. That's a hard place to get to, but I think that's amazing that however you've gotten there. Because again, it's a lot of hours clocked in. But
well, I'll tell you what, this is just the beginning. You know, I cut my teeth here on the, as I say, here on the scene in town, and a little bit abroad. I've been traveling a little bit more. This new record's coming out. I waited a while to pull the trigger on that. I had a lot of offers and a lot of things transpire, and a lot of maybes and a lot of what ifs, but we got her in the can, and it's going to come out soon. I'm really looking forward to it. And
Lonesome Country Songbook, is that what it's called? It's
the Lonesome Country Songbook.
There
yeah.
we go.
When's that come out?
You know, we've got what you call where you're pitching these songs to get them. Where are you going to get them?
Get them like playlisted and stuff like that.
You do it the poor man's way. Well, there's more than one way to skin a cat, you know, but no exactly. way to make him like it. we've got a method here, and we're going to get, they're in the process of getting mixed. And again, you know, people, you know, I've got that EP out and I got some singles out and things, but I think largely, people know me from seeing me live.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and so I really am truly looking forward to getting that record out, and also to the one that's coming out after that.
There you go. Did you cut the record live, or how? What was the process of doing it? How'd you go about
it? Well, we cut. There is a couple tunes on there that are live. Actually, maybe two or three. And I believe it's 11 in a bonus track, or 12 tunes in a bonus track, or something like that.
Some combination.
And some of it was just done me and a guitar, you know, singing and playing. Yeah. And then we'd build the track around that. And but of course we did both. I think methods of
that's a good way
everybody
to do it,
on the floor. Yeah, you know, for different tunes too. Mm-hmm.
Different things need different approaches.
Sure. But
when you are going, I guess this is sort of a roundabout way of asking this. When you are going through your day, because I'm fascinated by this with you, because all I can see you is music. You're the music man in my head, you know. So when you are
that's
like
a blessing. Music man.
So when you are going through your day, like what is the shit that you like doing? Like, is it are you into golf? Are you into alien conspiracies? What do you like doing besides music?
It's funny you said that. First thing that thought about when you said that is I've got a friend that's into golf and I got a friend that's into alien conspiracies. But me, I guess I'm in. Needed, but I will say I love the X-Files.
Oh, there you go.
I'm a guy that I write. You know, I write a lot. I've got stacks and stacks of papers at home. Yeah. A lot of people, and I've got a little notepad app on my phone that I've got a lot of writing on.
Oh, I'm the exact same way. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I've got both, but I've got I spend a lot of time late at night, and I'll have something on in the background, some TV on in the background. Mm-hmm. For me, it's good to have some white noise or something going on in the background. I've got a beautiful wife that's usually running around the house doing something, and I can hardly get her to peck me on the cheek. She's so busy, and she's a beautiful woman. And I've got Minnie Pearl, my coonhound. That's my baby, and she stays, hangs out with me, you know, while I'm working on this and that. But I, at the house, you know, if I don't have a session or something that I've been called to do that day for work, which, you know, is how our job, you know, it's a very, very self-employed business, and you have to check the calendar every day that you wake up to make sure that you're not missing something that day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And but if I don't have nothing like that going on in the morning, or a private party or something, I've got a private party tomorrow. If I don't have anything like that going on, I'm sitting at home tinkering, maybe running around town with my wife. I'm going to visit my mom out in Greenbrier, helping around the cabin out there. She's got a lot of stuff. You know, we're still moving stuff. My Anyway, yeah, we. my mama's husband passed 25 years just recently, so there's a lot of work needs done down there now more than ever before. So I spend my time between doing all kinds of stuff like that around town. Nice. Try to make it to shows too. Try to make it to friends.
Yeah, I was going to ask you. So who are some people, or it could be local people around Nashville or just outside of Nashville. Who are some up and coming artists that you really enjoy?
Well, up and coming artists. I'll tell you what.
Or just some people that you think more people should hear.
Sure. I think I'll tell you what. I've got three right here. Bure, Dallas Borough, and the Deltas. Them are my three. I say that because I don't want to say Sierra because she's already getting recognized.
Yeah, she's blowing up.
For exactly what I knew, you know, she'd be recognized for, which is her incredible, incredible talent and her personality and her character and her voice. And a dear friend of mine. So I would have mentioned Sierra, but she's already doing great.
Doesn't need a mention.
But I say that this is a hustling, working world, and we haven't reached that level of recognition yet. And I think that a lot of traveling legs are going to be added to everything that's going on once this record comes out. But I'll say Bure, incredible songwriter, country redneck twang rock and roll, got a great style, very unique. Again, I think that's what makes the world go around. I think that might be why people come out to see us, you know, because it's not like we do it on purpose, but I don't think that we sound like anybody else going on out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Bure's got that going on. Dallas Borough from Texas has got that going on. Incredible songwriter.
I don't know that person.
He's opened up for Charlie Crockett a couple different times. Fucking awesome, man. Fucking awesome. And a great songwriter, great storyteller. And the Deltas. And Bure and the Deltas is both Nashville-based here. The Deltas, I think, was from California. Somewhere out there, something happened. They had the fire out there, and they ended up, I think your house burned down. They ended up coming out here.
Oh, wow.
And their brother duo, and they're fucking awesome. All three of the dudes I mentioned are awesome. But I do love the Deltas duo thing they got going on. A lot of people think about brother duos, one guy on the drums and guitar. They think the Black Keys and all this. Yeah. Isn't like nothing.
Well, like now I'm excited to check this out. There you
go. Nothing. And they're bad in the bone. I love the way that he plays guitar, and they sing harmony together. They do a real good job, and you can catch them out there in Puckett's, what's it called now, Fox and Lock out there in Leapers Fork. Anyway, nice. Who are some about three people?
Who are some guitar players that have influenced the way you play guitar? Because I mean, I was saying this to you earlier, but I love your guitar playing. It's one of those things where I think when people think of you, they don't necessarily think of you as a guitar player, but you have a very specific way of playing. And I want to know if there's any people that you've heard in your life that influence that.
Man, I appreciate you saying that. I'll tell you that I think that every guitar player has kind of our vocabulary, so to speak, and things that we like more than others. And of course, you know, some guitar players are less lazy and have learned more. And that's the simple truth of it. Practice, practice, practice. But I appreciate you saying that, man. I think that it's tough. I grew up listening to my daddy all my life, and I grew up listening to of course the classic rock and roll and all the country and all the bluegrass stuff and all them kind of runs, you know, that the Tony Rice-esque runs and the old classic bluegrass that are plainer things that are, but it's still the blues, you know. And I've always said this too, is that the country music, I think that the young people here are getting turned on to, is, you know, that you go listen to at Honky Tonk Tuesday and shit like that here in town, is more closely related to the blues and the stuff that's on the radio today.
It's all pretty much all American music. It all, you trace it back, it goes back to the blues.
Yeah, but that stuff's real
tangled up.
That's really where it all started.
But I think that my daddy definitely influenced my playing. He's an incredible guitar player. I think the need to be my father is a is a, if you go, his name's Robert Bolin, B-O-W-L-I-N, and I love my dad. He's, you know, like I said, one of my favorites. He's got instrumental records and stuff. And but he's very clear when he plays. Everything was, it was taught to me to not play things mushy. Play it, play it clear. It was as clear as you can anyway. And me, I'm a little rough around the edges. But I know that. But you do, you want to make, you want to play and sing with as much diction as you can, so people are understanding of what's going on. And I think playing by yourself, I always noticed that when I would hear, growing up, I'd hear people playing, and I would always enjoy the guy that was playing more like James Taylor. Mm-hmm. Who had structure behind what he was singing when it was just him and his guitar, or Bob Dylan on Free Will and Bob Dylan, yeah. Who had structure, what was going on, or any blues artist that you want to, that you Sun House, any motherfucker, any of the Lightning Hopkins, any of them guys from that era, that really it comes down to rhythm, really and truly, because somebody can sing out of tune or play the wrong key, but if you do it in rhythm, then somebody can stop that.
It is all rhythm and groove is where it's at.
Yeah, like so I don't even know if we ever talked about this. So my background, I went to school for American roots music. Like that's what I love. That's the music that I've loved my whole life. Hence Rusick. One of my favorite guitar players, Hubert Sumlin, everyone thinks of him as a lead player. Phenomenal rhythm player. Because he could step out when he needed to, but it's all that groove. It's all just locking in with that rhythm section. That's my favorite kind of guitar player.
All the players I really, really love, like the one thing they all have in common is their time is
impeccable.
Spot on. Like, you know when you hear someone who is like rough around the edges and doesn't really play anything super technical or fancy, but for whatever reason, it just sounds so good.
Yeah.
Rhythm. It's hard to explain why, but
and it's in time.
I think a big reason is time. Yeah. Just like time and rhythm.
I spend a lot of time in my life.
I agree with you big time.
Yeah, like all the best players.
Yeah. Strumming, your rhythm, yeah.
Exactly.
You're so right about
that. And guitar also, I mean, guitar is, it's built to be a supportive instrument. I mean, historically, that's what it's built to do. I mean, obviously, we can utilize it in other ways now, but I mean, that's what guitar sounds best on. It's best to support a melody. Mm-hmm. And so when people can do that well, oh, it's the best.
I agree.
It's one of the hardest things.
It really is. I mean, and so I spend a lot of time teaching guitar and otherwise. And one of the things that I always stress to people, I think music can oftentimes seem big. It can seem like a lot to take in. Mm-hmm. And I always tell people, you can always break it down to two components. You got pitch and you've got rhythm, and that's it. Now those are two massive worlds. Like that, looking under the hood, I mean, it's insane once you do that, but it's always just pitch and rhythm. And I feel like for guitar players, and this is probably true of other instruments as well, we can get very fixated on the pitch side of things. My scales, my finger positions, my, you know, all of that stuff. Rhythm, I mean, that's such a huge part of the equation with any instrument you're using.
Well, I think the reason is the pitch is so much easier to analyze in like, whereas like you take rhythm, there could be a groove that's just like straight quarter notes and one guy could play it and it sounds fucking awesome. So one guy that always like blew my mind was when I was in music school. I took lessons from Tomo Fujita.
Yes. Yeah.
And it would blow my mind so much because he would just play a basic rhythm on like one chord. He'd just take like a bar chord and just play like a funk rhythm, not changing chords, just one straight bar chord the whole time. And he would make it sound so good. Like not even like any kind of fancy rhythm or anything, something you would just like pick up the guitar and randomly figure out how to play. But for whatever reason, he just makes it sound so good, even though it's so plain and simple. And it's just having that super solid groove. It's one of the hardest things to get good at because there's nothing, whereas like pitch it's very easy to like analyze and be like,
mm-hmm. you know, it's much more intellectual. It's much more intellectually.
It's not as abstract.
Carter yeah, Stanley could do that.
There you go. Just
but yeah, like pitch or groove and rhythm, I think is like one of those things that, you know, it's not as concrete, but like the person who has it, like they're.
Oh, you know, for sure. I think the best way to articulate
and
that.
And then
is,
the other thing I also think is takes you to that next level, but is also kind of elusive is tone is like the other big yeah, one.
For sure.
Yeah. Well, groove that's and also, tone. You know, that's also it's one of them subjective things for a lot of folks, but, you know, and whether you're playing live into a microphone, or if you're playing through a DI, you know, you're mic'd, you know, through your guitar into a chord. And yeah, I agree with you big time, big time. Tone is definitely extremely, for me, when I hear something, it's nice to hear the guitar sounding rich and full and like a box of wood.
Yeah, exactly.
As opposed to tinny or metallic sounding. And no offense to all the pickup makers out there, but I find that the pickups that are put underneath the saddle, I don't like them pickups. I like the pickups that are put near the sound hole.
Mm-hmm.
Pickups on the sound hole, it somehow it captures the real tone of the guitar, it seems to me. And I've had many guitars, and old cheap guitars, and really, not real expensive guitars, but I have some expensive guitars, but I've had the pickup in all of them. My favorite pickup is that one back there I got on that LR bag. So big. Oh, by the way, big old shout out to Mike Luckett here from LR Bags and Ashley Atch from Recording King.
Yeah, I was going to bring up the Recording King
great,
thing.
Great people, and yeah, very, very supportive of the local music community here. And believe it or not, I'm going to say this on the radio, my LR Bags venue DIs got stolen 3 times. I swear to God, I'm not one of them guys that pawns my shit. I really need my shit. It got stolen three
That's
times.
That's how you know it's quality material right there.
It's probably stolen in Nashville. Man, and the thing of it is I keep, I reach out to Mike and I feel bad. And I feel like he thinks I'm going to sell this shit. But I'm like, man, Mike, I need another
That's
thing.
That's hilarious. So how long have you been with Recording King at this point? Because it's been a little bit, right? How did that all start?
Well, you know, I haven't thought about that, but I guess it has been a couple of years. I guess it all started because a good friend of mine, Aaron Goodrich, had spoke with Ashley and I said, hey, man, this guy's doing things here in town, and if you don't know him, da-da-da-da. Mm-hmm. And so a friendship was born, and I've actually turned Ashley on to a lot of my other friends and in this community, in the music community here. And it's turned out real well. Recording King is a great guitar. You can always get it set up at the luthier or the guitar repairman of your choice and get it set up the way you want it. It's a really, really good piece of wood when you don't have, $15,000 to spend on your favorite Martin.
Yeah, and they are great for the price. We actually have one in the other room. Casey got me one. And
they record real good, too.
Yeah, they're great.
Yeah, man.
That's amazing. Yeah. They're solid guitar. They make all kinds of stuff. They make really good, like, entry-level guitars, mm-hmm. and they also make some nicer, I say expensive, but I mean.
No, but you're right.
Yeah, compared to other things, yeah.
Price range.
Yeah, exactly. What was your first guitar? Do you remember? What was the first guitar that was yours?
I sure do. First guitar that Dad gave me that was mine, that was not a guitar that I played around the house,
mm-hmm.
was a Harmony Montclair. And it was an arch top, and it was black arch top with white binding and a white floating pickguard. And I said Harmony Montclair on the head of it, and had paint, you know, down the neck, instead of pearl, mm-hmm. it was paint on there, and it was a great guitar. I remember I loved it, and I should have taken better care of it. I can't remember what I did with it. I think I painted on it or some shit. I tried to turn it white, and Dad seen it. Oh, my God, I can never forget Dad's face. Oh, what did you do, you know?
Yeah.
But I remember that. But Yeah, that was my very first guitar. One of the first guitars I started playing around in the house was the classical guitar that Dad had when he was a kid, played. And the strings that was on this guitar was still on the guitar. Still played just fine. Still stayed in tune just fine.
Wow.
Old nylon strings, you know.
Yeah.
And on it's called a Recco. R-E-C-C-O. And very, very cool guitar. And then he had a Martin. It was made out of all mahogany. The whole thing was brown wood. And the neck was all sunken in between the frets, you know, pitted from being played on so many times. And it used to, he said his mama bought it for him. You know, it's one another guitar he played on. His mama bought it for him, my Nana. That's what we call them, Nana and Dad had on my daddy's side. And it used to belong to some blues singer. It still had her name kind of painted in the neck.
Mm.
On there, but it, we couldn't really tell what it said because it was all chipped off. We played on that guitar, and I guess one of the first three guitars that I played on.
Very nice.
And he had a Tysco Del Rey.
Oh, there
that
you
he
go.
Played on when he was a kid, and it was a Sunburst electric guitar, you know, with the cool 10-4 pickups. Yeah. Very cool.
Some of those pickups, like even the pickups that Harmony was putting on back then, sound so goddamn good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what guitar absolutely. Are you playing now?
Well, I play, of course, I got my Recording King, and I also have a, it's called a pre-war guitar, and it's a company that specializes in making a guitar that is similar to the pre-war Martin models, and I don't know quite how they can do that, you know, with copyright infringement and so on and whatever and whatever, so I don't know the whole specifics of it, but it is an incredible guitar, and, a very expensive guitar in my eyes at this time in my life. And I take good care of it, although it has a couple things in it. But also it's one of them ones that's been baked in the oven to look distressed.
There
so.
You go.
But it sounds great, and I play it an awful lot. I've also got an electric guitar that I went to Sam Ash years, you know, a couple years before it closed. And I grew up going to Sam Ash, you know, so they had one there right on the border of Davidson County and Sumner County here in town. And later on, I found out they had one in New York and so on and so forth. But I bought this electric guitar from there that was made, I think they told me it was made from some dude in Clarksville. It's kind of like a parts caster, you know?
Yeah.
But, man, it played better than any fucking other Fender that I played.
Parts caster sounds so goddamn good.
It's the shit anyway.
Yeah, that Sunburst one right over there, that's...
The neck pickup on that guy
sounds
awesome.
That's a parts caster.
So
it's the cheapest guitar I own and the best sounding guitar I have.
But, you know, it's all, to me, it's a lot about the neck, you know, and,
what
the bridge.
Electric...
Saddle.
What's, like, your main electric guitar?
That's the one I'm... thinking about here, it's on the neck.
It's a parts caster.
I never found out much about it, but I traded in the Fender Jaguar I had because I didn't really want that short scale neck.
Oh yeah, I forgot you had that Jaguar.
I played that. I wanted something different, you know. But
I'm trying to think because there was one time I actually played one of your guitars.
Really?
There was one time we were at the local, and you invited Casey to play a song up there, and then Casey told me to come like play guitar. So he played an acoustic guitar and I played whatever guitar you were playing. I want to say it was the
I bet you anything that
Jaguar
it probably was. The local was Jaguar times for sure.
But what I was going to bring up about like tone and stuff, like I'm such a fan of you as a guitar player and your guitar tone. I think you sound so good up there.
Man, I really just brought you in to just like tell you how much we love your music.
I remember that day Casey goes up to play a song, tells me to come up to play guitar with him, and I play your electric guitar setup, and you sounded so good the whole night, and I sounded so bad on your setup.
Oh, you cracked me up, man.
And it was just, it's interesting to me how much different how much of it is the person playing, right? Like,
well, sure.
Like, you, sound so good with your setup, and I remember just going up there playing with your setup without messing with anything, and I was like, this is not working for me.
In that situation, of course, you want to get used to it. Whoever, old dude's.
And keep in mind, Brian is my favorite guitar player in the world, so that's saying something when he's, blown.
I appreciate you getting up and picking with them, and I'll tell you that I really... I love reverb, man. I love reverb. Mm-hmm. I don't have a volume pedal, and I don't have very many special effects. I'd use the only special effects that I did use sometimes was a very soft tape echo, and it just kind of soft in the background. But I love reverb. And I love a little bit of dirt.
What kind of reverb you use?
Man, I'll tell you what. I use the Music Man.
Like a pedal or?
No, the Music Man amp. I go straight into the Music Man 212 that I've got. I love that amp. The people over at Himes Amp was telling me that when Leo broke away from Fender and made that amplifier, that he was wanting to make a special reverb, a reverb that was different than the one on the Fender Twin. Mm-hmm. And that, whatever, but I love that reverb, so I plug straight into that thing. And what I do on most of my electric guitars is I screw the tail pickup a little closer to the strings. Mm. And I use that as a volume jack, because I always like to use that tail pickup as my solo pickup anyway, because I like that sound.
Are you like a big gear guy and super meticulous about like stuff like that, or are you just kind of like, you play whatever, and if it sounds good, you go with it? Or,
well, I'll tell you what, I am particular about my own sound. Uh-huh. When I get up there, your knobs sometimes be banged around for moving it around. You got to make sure everything sounds right. I can't just plug in and play, I don't think, but I guess I could, but I am very simple. I don't I don't spend a lot of time fucking with pedals and shit. I am interested when somebody brings something to me and they say, man, this is badass, and they show me my shit, that's badass. I'll use it one time, try it out.
I always find there's two different kinds of guitar players. There's guitar players that, like myself, have a particular sound that they're shooting for, and then it becomes this obsessive thing of trying to get that sound. And it takes a lot of time and energy and money usually, but you're trying to work towards that. There's people who are like gear people who want to like, oh, there's this cool pedal, let me add this. And again, like both ways are valid. But I find for me, there's a particular sound in my head, and then it's okay, how do I get there? And you never quite know how you're getting.
That's a thing too. When you're searching for a particular sound.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about genre, crossing genres here, not even in country or whatever, blues or roots, Americana, whatever the fuck you want to call it. But yeah, when you're searching for a sound like that, I also think there's people like that. I guess I've always been more interested in actual playing, and of course the tone that you can get out of that there. But there's times when you do, when special effects are much needed or can be much used to change the dynamic of a song.
Absolutely.
I love tremolo too, is another one.
Yeah.
I love some good tremolo, man. When somebody puts it on fast or slow, man, come on now.
Yeah, my amp's actually that Tweed Fender over there. And I've played that for quite a few years.
Looks like and, a horse.
I'm a simple person. Like, I just want to plug in and get the sound that I want, But and then it's funny. So my day job is I teach. I'm a middle school music teacher. And
Badass.
It's a fun. It's
Casey,
a,
I didn't know that.
I enjoyed it. Cool. I'm lucky.
Badass.
But it's funny. So at the school, we've got a bunch of just shitty little Fender practice amps. And there's this one like crappy PV amp from like the late 70s, early 80s that sits in the corner. And the first time I plugged into that amp, I was like, holy fucking shit, this is the best sounding amp. why does this amp sound so good? And it's because it's like, you spend all this time trying to get to that sound in your head, or at least, again, that's the way I do it. And then for whatever reason, you plug in this amp, it's like, oh, that's the sound that I want. Like, that's the thing. But it's funny when you accidentally stumble into that. It's a good feeling.
I find it.
Oh, yeah.
I try to almost like consciously stay away from going down the gear rabbit hole.
Yeah.
Because it, dude,
never ending.
It never ends. You never get there. Like you think, oh, I just need this thing. Oh, maybe I'll change out this pickup. Maybe I just need this speaker in my amp. Like it never ends.
You just keep chasing.
So I try to chase the dragon, man.
I try to just like
nowadays I plug into my guitar. I don't even look at the knobs. On the I plug in, play some shit. If it sounds good. We're good, but yeah, I don't know.
This makes me want to start a YouTube channel and do a pedal of the week.
Yeah, there you go. Just to piss him off.
Yeah, yeah. I'd be your first subscriber.
You have to co-host it.
I keep it with the simple with the gear. Like this amp in the corner over here is my dad bought that for me when I was 13, and it's the only amp I've ever played.
Yeah, Brian, we've said this previously in the show, but every gig that I've played myself, like playing my music, in the last 10 years, Brian's played on. And I think almost every one of them, he's used that fucking amp.
I'm sure I did because it's the only amp I ever. It's an amazing sound. My dad.
It really is. It's a good sounding amp.
Knocked it out of the park. Shout out to dad.
Is that one with two volume knobs or does it have the one volume knob on?
It has like one volume knob and then. But there's like another channel. There's like a separate channel for the.
Gotcha, yeah.
I only use the one clean channel. If I want dirt, I get it from pedals.
Cool. There you go.
I keep it simple. It's just the amp. It's all. I played it for so long too. I think there's something to be said for really knowing your gear. Like that amp, I've played it for so long. If I want it to sound a certain way, I know how to get the sound of that amp because I played it for so long. Whereas like a new amp, I'm like not used to how it works.
Yeah.
Whereas like if I'm looking for a sound out of this, like I know it so well.
Yeah,
like
electric instruments.
Super easy.
Electric instruments are difficult because I feel like there's always there's like a middleman there. Whereas when you're playing, let's say an acoustic guitar, it's about you and the resonance of that instrument. So you can it feels more direct in a way. And I feel like with electric instruments, it can be hard because it does feel like there's that middleman there sometimes. And so knowing your gear can sort of be best case scenario. But like for me, like I don't.
But at the end of the day, like it all does come down. Like if your hands. I want a difference in my sound, like I just really focus on how I'm playing.
Yeah,
and I try to get it through that because like, you know, and not hating on the gear nerds, like there is something to be said for that. But I just think like it's a never ending rabbit hole. You'll never get to the bottom.
I go the extreme with it. I don't. I just run my amp really hot. If I want to be clean, I play a Strat, so I just turn the volume down. And when I want to get some punch, I just turn the volume up.
Totally.
You know, I say what kind of music has the person been listening to? You know, that they want what kind of tone that they want. You know, what is pleasing to their ears? And for me, it has always been a guitar that can play rhythm in a semi-clean, maybe just a baby bit of dirt, in a semi-clean, tone, a rich, full, thick tone that I can use to play all kinds of different chords, or I could play tic-tac with. Mm-hmm. And then the solo, would be me when I'm jacking it back like that to the bridge pickup there, is real sharp and real.
It cuts through.
Yeah. That's right.
But it's still got a little body to it.
And the reverb. I love the reverb. And it's like a full tone, but it's like the amp tone. It's like the guitar and the amp tone.
Yeah.
Here we are. This is what you hear coming out. There's no other bullshit.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, and I love it. But it makes sense that people would use compressors and and flange if they're trying to get a certain sound, or chorus if they're trying to get a certain, you know what I'm saying, for a different song.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
My music, man, it's a 212.
Do you use any like modulation effects? Like,
well, I got a tremolo.
Phaser. Tremolo,
that's
yeah.
That's all I got on there. And
that's
I
one of the more thing. Subtle ones. Do you use like a pedal, or you got an amp that has it? Or?
No, yeah, it's that Music Man. It's got a reverb, but it's got two tremolo knobs, you know, for as fast and his and his intensity or whatever.
And, I got the Flint Strymon.
Yeah,
it's like a pedal. It's got tremolo and then also a super good sounding reverb.
Nice, there you go.
Strymon makes good stuff.
It's a good combo.
Check them out.
You know, that's it's the two classics, you know.
Yeah.
But the dirt is a little bit of dirt, you know, goes a long way in my opinion.
I like a little chorus here and there.
Yeah, me too.
Other than that, I can't say. I guess phaser sometimes too.
Let's say the first time we all use
especially
word
for country stuff.
Yeah,
there's some good applications for phaser for sure.
Waylon's got some stuff. Man, I'll tell you what. Speaking of chorus, every time we've been saying chorus, I've been thinking of a. And here I am, you know, I play all kind of love all kind of music, but
yeah.
I've been listening to that, going back and listening to that first. Dire Straits record.
Yeah. I love
Boy, he's got a water of love when he's got that chorus on his voice.
Yeah.
I was listening to that the other day. I'm going, what the fuck is that that makes his voice sound like that? I go, oh, it's got to be a chorus or something, you know?
Yeah.
Yes, I need a little water of love.
It's funny with chorus. I like it either really, really subtle or just fucking way over the top, like nothing in between. Like, I like to crank my chorus up and get like a almost like B3 kind of sound. If you ever hear, like, do you know who Charlie Hunter is?
I don't, but I think about Queen.
Go listen to some Charlie Hunter. He'll melt your mind.
Oh,
Charlie Hunter.
Yeah, definitely go listen to him. But you can almost make your guitar sound like a Hammond B3 organ, like if you set your chorus the right way. I think he uses like something that is more designed to emulate a Leslie speaker, but you can kind of get away with it with a chorus pedal.
Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy.
Man, Keir. Here we are talking about Keir. Yeah, I never thought this day would happen.
But
that's funny.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got one of those. I wish I could remember for the life of me what it's called. Like, God knows I spent way more money than I should have on it. But, again, to get this sound in my head, because I do have a small pedal board, but I don't touch it. Like, when I play, I do not touch that thing. It stays back by my amp. It's like just gets the sound that I want. But I've got this little it's gonna kill me. I can't think of the name of it, but it's interesting. It's not a chorus. It's not a phaser. It's a complete. It's a random. I think they call it like a randomizer, where it every signal that goes in, it offsets it at a random frequency. So it's so, and I put it on just like super, super subtle. Yeah.
That's
so
you can, basically what a chorus is, kind of.
But
it changes probably.
Yes, but it changes every time. So there's no like regularity to it. Mm-hmm. And I just keep it like super, super, like barely on. Mm-hmm. And when I play guitar.
Some depth.
When I play guitar, like to me, I always think of my instrument as a voice.
Texture.
Yeah. And I think of it in relationship to a voice, like the same thing, like with gain or
absolutely.
Like,
absolutely.
Like I want that feeling of like when someone projects and it comes out.
Well, that's what I use that tape to life. That I liked to that tape. It was just a baby little piece of it on there. Mm-hmm. And you could just barely hear what I was playing echoing back. Just barely. It was like I was in what I was playing was mystical country. I'm just kidding. No. But anyway. Yeah.
Who are some, this is kind of similar to what I was asking earlier, but who are some of your all-time favorite musicians? If you, and again, God knows you'll leave people out, and there's people on the car drive home. You're gonna
Mount Rushmore.
But who are some people that you love, just that have stayed with you for a long time?
That's tough, man. Boy. Man, it's really tough. You know, I guess there's many fields, but Boy, that's really tough.
Out of country music. Doesn't have to be in country music. Mm-hmm.
First of all, my daddy. Mm-hmm. My dad. Mm-hmm. You said my favorite musicians, right?
Yeah,
my dad. I think he's incredible. I really do. I always thought he was incredible. And even going through life and hearing everybody else play out there, there's a lot of great players out there. My dad, I always thought he was great, and he's still a standard to me. And you'll hear a lot of folks around town. You know, I love hearing stories about my dad. Hear some crazy stories about my dad sometimes. But really, he's a real chill kind of guy. And I know I've talked a lot about him, but you are what you come from. And even though I haven't spent as much time in my life with my father as some kids have. He was around some parts of my life, and the important parts of my life anyway. And but man, you can't help but be like the people that raised you, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I just always thought he was incredible. I think Flat and Scruggs. Mm-hmm. Was one of the first voices that I heard growing up. Flat Scruggs, Bill Monroe. My mama and my grandmother, her mama and my mama's sister, Aunt Candy, all sang as a three-piece, and I always thought that they had been incredible. And I always loved Ernest Tubb. I always loved Ernest Tubb, man. I thought he was the shit. I thought he was
I love his voice. I love his voice. I love his songwriting.
There's a period of his career that's really incredible. I had an incredible band. Countryfield, you know, of course, love all the Willie Nelson stuff, you know, is great. Loved Frank Sinatra. Loved jazz. Love Herbie Hancock. Herbie ever did.
There's a lot of jazz in your playing. Lot of jazz in your playing.
Well, my daddy loved the jazz. You know, he didn't just have... And we listened to a lot of, you know, because I'm from the era that didn't have cell phones. You know, we was on the cusp. We had mm-hmm. been on the cusp. I remember right when my parents got beepers and pay phones stopped being used then because everybody got a cell phone. But records, my parents had records and we spent these records and he had all kinds of stuff in there. But Mama and George Benson, Wes Montgomery, stuff like that was great. Mama, when she grew up, she wasn't allowed to listen to anything except for what her parents bade her listen to, which was the Grand Ole Opry, bluegrass, and some country, but not very, you know. But that was about it. They weren't allowed to listen to much of anything else. And so as she got older, she started getting into all kinds of stuff. And he was talking about a phase or a chorus earlier. I was thinking about that Queen song, Dynamite with a Laser Beam. And the Queen is one of my mama's favorite rock bands. You know, she had
Casey
a Queen record.
Hates Queen, but I think they're fucking amazing.
They're fucking incredible. Well, let me say
when I was in college, I used to blast Queen.
And it would always piss off Casey.
Well, Cleaning Day. Well, it was Cleaning Day in the house growing up. And Mama had she called it the Ghetto Blaster, the big little boombox. And we played that, and we played Wynonna Judd, No One Else on Earth, and all that stuff. But anyway, yeah, we got a diverse. And then growing up, of course, rap music was all around. All my friends, you know, and some of the schools I went to growing up, I was a minority in my neighborhood and grew up around... lot of metro, you know, Nashville was very different back in the day. And there was a lot going on. And I liked it better that way because the culture was there. Not to say that there's still not culture there, but I wish you guys could have seen the way Nashville was, mm-hmm. you know, to really get a view of what it was like before the big boom. And to get a view of all the different cultures that was here, it was incredible. And but anyway.
Yeah, when did you feel like that? Because, again, we got out here 6 years ago. When did you feel like that boom first started to happen? When did you start to notice? Because I'm sure, like anything, it's gradually and then all at once. But when did you first start to realize it was happening?
I think I realized it was happening when I came back from Knoxville. In 2000, I graduated in 2007. It was about 2010 when that flood happened. It was a big flood here, and it fucking, you know, just destroyed everything around here. And I think that there was a lot of development going on before that, but what happened is that wiped a lot of the slates clean around here, and it gave these real estate developers a chance to do this. A lot of people from California moving in, a lot of people from Ohio moving in, a lot of people from New York moving in, a lot of people from Canada moving in, and a lot of people with money. Mm-hmm. And I think that began to shape the development of, I could be wrong, it could be another catalyst, but in my eyes, you know, I lived in Knoxville for a little while, and I come back, and there was so much that was blown up.
I mean, just blown up.
That was 2010, you said?
I said that, yeah. I think that flood was in 2010, if I'm not mistaken. Could be a mistake. Could be 2009, somewhere around in there. But it was a big flood here in Nashville. And I think that that gave the people with money a chance to change the landscape a lot. And, and, of course, East Nashville changed. Because East Nashville had a very, very vibrant black community, very vibrant Mexican community. And not to say that there ain't nothing wrong with everybody moving in, coming to hang out, but the gentrification is a very real thing in this town because of how small this town was. And again, I say that it was a sleepy town. I always tell people, you know, what was Nashville? People ask, what was Nashville? I always say sleepy is a good word for it, because it was at one time. It was still Music City. There was still lots of badass stuff going on. Brooks and Dunn was right down the street, and they was also on my cornflake cereal box. You know, that was cool. You know, but it was still a sleepy town.
Yeah, you know? And that's the other thing that I think people are surprised about when they come here is just geographically, it's a very small city. I mean, it's not a big spot.
I always realize this, and I just now started in the past couple of years traveling a little bit more and getting out. Of course, that's happening more and more often now, and it's about to start happening a lot more than I know that. but seeing all these cities and seeing, I mean, it's incredible. You're right. Nashville is a little ass town, and it still is.
Yeah, it still is.
Yeah, it's gotten bigger vertically, but
yep, you're right.
Geographically, it's still pretty small.
I got a song, and I'm going to copyright this for them to listen. But anyway, I got a song I've been writing. It's called Crane City.
Yeah, I like it.
Dude, I remember there was one time I was standing on the bridge. It was in 2020, like a little bit after, I guess it was like during the whole COVID thing. I was on the bridge going over the gulch on Church Street. And I remember I just stood there for a sec and counted all the cranes I could see. And I think I counted, just from where I was, I counted 30.
Wow, that's wild.
Just from where I was standing.
It's been less than that, but that's incredible.
Yeah, it was.
Which now it makes sense, man. Yeah, they're everywhere. Crazy. And so it is. It's a lot of buildings.
What do you have show wise coming up? What's on the horizon for performing?
Well, let's see here. You know, I've got an incredible place here in town, and I love to shamelessly self-promote.
Go for it. Promote as much as you want. You
know, we do it all the time.
All my friends, yeah. And the Jane's Hideaway crew over there, right next to Dino's out east Nashville. Yeah. And that is just a great place. They got great foods, great bar, great people. They focus on the roots music there. Usually you won't find drums there. You'll find a bull fiddle and bluegrass, things of that nature. But or roots music. Every Monday when I'm in town, I do a show with a good friend of mine, and you can't find him on Instagram, Facebook, because he don't like any of that shit. But his name is Brett Lanier, and he's a great, great steel picker. I'm going to brag on him a little bit. And his main gig, he goes out with Billy Currington, plays with him. He's a great, great steel picker. And then he comes back home, and he wants to play some other stuff. And, of course, I love Billy Currington. He's a great, great songwriter, and I love everything he does. I liked his early records. But we do that on Mondays from 8 to 11, Jane's Hideaway, as a duo. And we can play a lot of tender stuff, a lot of stuff I wrote, as opposed to the honky-tonk circuit, you know, downtown, where I'm just kidding, but I affectionately call Broadway Sodom and Gomorrah a lot of the time, because it's like it's crazy down there now, right?
Yeah.
And going back on that, I was going to say, when growing up, there was no rooftop bar. There was no open windows. There was none of that. None. Broadway was not necessarily quiet, but it was way quieter. And there was a whole lot of busking going on. There was tons of buskers. I mean, like professional buskers. Uh-huh. And there was like a Michael Jackson, and there was a Silver Cowboy, and all kinds of stuff.
It seems like Broadway kind of just got catapulted to a new level. Like, I mean, I'm sure
I agree.
It's a whole nother thing, but like I feel like it had a huge jump up like right after COVID happened, because I remember when we first moved here, like it was super busy down there, But like, you could still go on like a Friday night, get into wherever you want to go, and like, but like the past like year or two, it's fucking crazy down there, man. Mm-hmm. Like, it seems like the number of people who go down there on the like the weekends, the amount of tourism that's starting to come here, it's like quadrupled at least. Like,
ain't kidding.
It's crazy.
I mean, it used to mean a lot. You know, I used to work down there. And actually, I did a gig down there at Acme today, 3 to 6. I love the Acme folks. Big shout out to Acme Feed and Seed, historic Acme.
Yeah, Acme's a fun one. Brian yeah. likes telling a story of of me clearing the room at Acme.
Yeah, we did a gig there once. It was kind of rough.
What, did you shit your pants?
Right, you think? You would have thought. You would have thought.
Something like that.
Yeah, it wasn't the room for the stuff we were playing. It was quite funny. But
Acme,
I love Acme. I really, really love that spot.
Nah, yeah.
The people there are super, super nice. Like, so nice.
Yeah, well, they, but you know, that's a thing down there. You meet all kinds of people down there. To go back to that, I love meeting the people from out of town, especially from across. And I'm not down there hardly anymore, you know, mm-hmm. but I play down there at Acme every now and again.
Yeah.
Sent my letter of resignation into a lot of different places here in town. Been working on working smarter, not harder. Mm-hmm. But one of my favorite parts of this and living this life and in this occupation is that you do meet people from all around the world. But also one of my favorite things was when you met somebody from here that is just like from Ashland City or something, yeah. you know, or they're from Kentucky. We're from Kentucky. We just come down here for music. Like, it's great to see you, man. Thanks for coming down. You know, because they're locals too, you know.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
like
yeah,
they
yeah.
live right next door. That's Kentucky's funny. My second favorite state. Can't help it. So.
when you're playing with someone, my mind goes to a rhythm section here, but I think this is probably true of anyone. What are you listening for as a band member? When you're playing with a band, whether you're fronting it or otherwise, what are you listening for? What's your ear tuned into when you're playing that song?
For rhythm?
Yeah, for as a guitar, really as a guitar player, Jim, but I think this is true as a vocalist or as a rhythm player. What I think everyone's relationship to the song mm-hmm. is different. What is your relationship to the song when you're playing?
I agree. Well, I play with a four-piece band, so there's only a bass, a drum, me on guitar, and a steel player. Well, I'll be playing rhythm, you know, I'll mm-hmm. be singing in that steel and do the fills. Just depends on what we're doing, and what I'd be really listening to mm-hmm. is how the beat is swinging. What's happening with the beat? Is it a straight song?
Yeah.
Is it a shuffle? Is it a waltz? You know, is it a ticky-tacky kind of song? Is it a kind of a swinging song? More like something you might hear from Bob Wills, chunking chords.
Yeah.
You know, and so I guess it's what the song calls for. You know, and if somebody, you know,
but starting from that place of rhythm, starting from that place of connecting with the bass and drums in that mm-hmm. way.
Yeah, most definitely. Rhythm again, it all goes back to rhythm. And, that's pretty much it. And you also want to stay out of your own way. Mm-hmm. You want to, of singing
yeah.
of your own melody. Of course you want to stay out of your own way and you want to stay out of your utility player's way. Why would you be, you know, playing a bunch of licks on your guitar at the same time you're singing if you've got the steel player over there and this is a four-piece and, you know, well, let him fucking play a little bit and fill in mm-hmm. between. Now, he shouldn't be playing over you singing, but mm-hmm. he should be filling in, and because there's only four of you up there, somebody needs to be keeping rhythm with the rest of the band, which would be traditionally the guitar.
Yeah. Yeah, I always find that for me, I mean, obviously, the melody's everything, right? So everything's in support of that melody. Whether it's the rhythm section, whether it's you playing counter melodies against that, whatever it is, it's always, whether it's someone taking a solo and somebody, now you are creating that melody in real time. Mm-hmm. Whatever it is, it's always in service of that.
I'll take a step further and say support the melody. Everything should be to support the melody.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with you, big time.
And that's a hard, that in and of itself is a difficult skill, because I think we put all of this time and effort into being as technically competent as we can be at our instrument.
Yeah.
And then we always have to remember, yes, that's great.
Yep.
But it's always in service of that thing. It's always in service of propping up that melody and giving it what it needs.
I think country music is a fine example of keeping something simple. And I've heard so many people say, well, man, that sometimes is fucking hard to do. You know, to get the nuance. You know, to get the nuance. And I think that that's been embedded in me to know that, oh, this is what I think a rhythm guitar should sound like. Or this is what, I'm not saying I'm the best in the world or anything, but I love to hear somebody who plays the traditional rhythm, you know, kind of a bluegrass rhythm behind what they're playing, or somebody who is competent in a kind of a finger picking style, maybe close to a Travis picking style, their own style, you know, which is, you know, all that stuff. Man, it's cool to, like, you know, to see somebody. And here we are circling back around to the structure, you know, to the structure of what's going on behind you when you're singing. It's very important.
Yeah, there's so many. I mean,
the drums hold it all together. I will say that when you say what I'm listening to, it will be the drums. Mm-hmm. You know, if the bass player knows what he's doing, it'll be like butter. You know, he'll just be playing with you.
I feel like if you have a good drummer and a good bass player,
which I do.
It's hard to go wrong.
Yes, you do.
It's hard to go wrong after that.
And they're my dear friends, and I love them. I want to give a big shout out to. And I have many dear friends of mine that have played with me throughout the years, many alumni. And when I get rich, or let me say this, I might not get rich, but when I get the money to make sure my mama never has to worry about anything again, which that will happen. And when that happens, I will also get everybody that's alumni in my band throughout the years. They've cut their teeth with me throughout the years. They're all going to get a satin jacket that says Lonesome Country Band on the back with their name on the front.
Good, good.
Because I'm a redneck and I like fancy things like that.
Yeah, that's a beautiful sentiment. You always have a very fine band. You got some good guys up there with you.
Well, I want to say the ones that have been with me for a very long time are the ones that are the nucleus here with me is Mr. Brian Zahn and Mr. Daryl Johnson. And, of course, Matty Meyer and Aaron Goodrich, Herschel Van Dyke. Many other people have been out there with me playing. Will Allison, when he first came to town, played a lot. With me, Jared Manzo's incredible. Jeff Henderson is incredible. All in bass players, you know, have played with me through the years. Or I've had the honor of playing with all of these people, rather, I should say. Dennis Crouch and, of course, Mark Thornton. We'll go back to Mark Thornton. Huge inspiration to me and a lot of people, guitar and playing. Nobody plays like Mark in town. He's incredible, tasteful. When I first started playing, taking everything seriously, my daddy, I'd rented a room in my daddy's, he had a house that he was renting or buying or some shit. I don't know what he's doing with. So over there off Graycroft over there in Old Hickory, or off Old Hickory Boulevard, rather. And he had introduced me to Mark, and that was how I started going out and playing. We would do a duo, and I would chunk chords, keep a good rhythm on the guitar, and he would play over that. And he's so tasteful, you know. He'd just make everything sound like a million fucking dollars.
He's one of those guys. He's one of those guys where
he's a shit.
Like, he'll play something that's like not super complicated, not super fancy.
Yeah, but it's like, how did he do that?
I could easily play that, but for whatever reason, when he plays it, it's just so much fucking better than if I were to have played it.
Well, and it's like timing too. Yeah. Going back to that timing,
tone, and
I've heard Mark play a lot of notes
mystical
over the years,
magic.
And not one
like,
of them is
I don't know what
you
it
know,
is.
You know what
like,
we call because you said tone, and you're so right about that. Because all of his guitars. The way he sets his thing up, the way he's got his old school Echoplex and everything, you know, I always called him Mr. Magic Tone. Mr. Magic Tone, Mark Thornton. Really and truly, that's his name. That's his nickname for years now. Mr. Magic Tone. I always tell everybody, that's Mr. Magic Tone, Mark Thornton. And he's got a guitar made by Wallace Guitars out of Tennessee here. It's a custom Mark Thornton guitar with his name. It says Magic Tone on it. It's bad. Fucking badass guitar. Anyway, love Mark Thornton. So.
Yeah, Mark's the man. I'm very much looking forward to having him on here because he's and also just a super sweet guy. Super, super sweet guy. Well, I'm really, really glad you did this, man. I'm so glad that you did this. This was a ton. This was a ton of fun. And I gotta say, I mean, again, none of this is just to sit here and blow smoke up your ass, but like, I really do feel like there are so many talented people in this city. So many talented people. But any conversation where that comes up, I think everyone in this country bubble that we love, and all of our, everyone just loves your music. And I think everyone thinks that this guy should be the standard of what's coming out of here. And that's the highest compliment I can give you, because truly is some phenomenal music coming out of here, but just please keep doing what you're doing.
Absolutely.
And I cannot wait for the next record. Cause the EP, I'm on one hand, I'm just shocked that it came out so long ago, but it is so fucking good. I was just listening to it again today, cause I hadn't heard it in a while. And
I'm real
excited for the next stuff. So
that really means the world. Yeah. That was another time and another chapter.
That just means you get to come on to the next chapter.
That's right. There you go. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Absolutely.
Well, I'm really glad you did this. So thank you so much. And the song sounded beautiful.
Dude, of course, yeah. Come back and do it again sometime.
Thank you for listening. Always.
Yeah, of course. Thank you so much, man. Like, this was a ton of fun. Like, I had a ball doing this.
Cool,
and also, again, it's just the more excuses to hear good music. So thank you so much for coming and playing.